So good afternoon and welcome to Happy Hour and a Quarter at Buddhist Society of Western Australia Saturday afternoon meditation class. And are we all ready to go? All good. Okay. So I just come back from overseas a day and a half ago, actually almost 2 days now, and this monk came back from Belgium, when was it? 2.5 days ago? 5 days?
Monday.
So we're both jet lagged. But fortunately, the last place I left, Oslo, that was 7 hour time difference. So now that is 8 a.m. over there. So 8 o'clock is when I'm up meditating and working hard. So I'm back to normal at the moment. So it feels really nice that right now, no jet lag. We'll come back again later on. Won't be able to sleep tonight, but never mind. You're a monk, you know how to be with your body and not to fight it, to understand it and learn from it. So we're now putting on the air con. So I'm just in Oslo. Can we have an Oslo temperature, please? It was 1 degree. They don't have good air cons here in Perth. The minimum is 16, and that is hot in Norway. Anyway, that's enough of the introductions. Now we can talk a little bit about meditation. And one of the explanations which I gave in our meditation retreats, meditation talks, which I gave in UK and also in Oslo, was how to deal with the restless mind. Because do you suffer from restlessness? That when you want to say watch the breath and your mind goes all over the place, when you're trying to be still and you're thinking about all the problems in the world or in somebody else's world, not your world. And do you get tired trying to always bring the mind back, whether it's onto the breathing or onto the body or onto loving kindness? Why does your mind keep wandering off? And one of the lovely ways of understanding that, it wanders off because, one, that's its nature, and number two, you think you have to stay on one thing in your meditation. So, did I leave Perth about 3 or 4 weeks ago? I didn't go anywhere. Wherever I was aware and there I was. I never flew to London. I never flew to Oslo. I just sat on the plane and the aircraft did the flying. Now, this is not a joke. It's learning to have a different perception of what you're doing and where you are. So wherever I was there. Now what about when your mind wanders off? If you can call it wandering off. Why do you perceive it to be wandering off? Off from where? In meditation, where do you expect yourself to be? And this is one of our problems. We are taught we have to be watching the breath. We have to be spreading loving kindness. We have to be aware of our body. We're taught we have to be somewhere. And sometimes the nature of our mind is aware of something else. So I wasn't here last week. Last week I was in Oslo. Is that wrong? And that's where I happened to be. So I was happy to be there. Because I was happy to be there, and that's where I was, when those two came together, there was peace. So when you are meditating, why do you always think that you're wandering off somewhere? Only thing is that you think that this is where I am, and I'm supposed to be aware of something else. That's a problem. If you look at they called it the second noble truth of suffering. Suffering is, you are here, you want to be somewhere else. Now, why do we do that in meditation? Where our mind is looking at something and we want it to look at something else. That is counter to the Buddha's teachings. That's why we call it restlessness and why we suffer. Why don't, wherever you happen to be, that's where you are, be mindful of it, be kind to it, learn from it, and then it, after a while, disappears. We don't try and cure it, we care for it. Now what that means, we start meditating and you think, I'm going to now go and watch my breath. Instead of saying or doing or thinking things like that, instead, when you are meditating, ask yourself, what are you aware of? Where are you? Yes, I'm supposed to be in Perth, but sometimes I'm somewhere else. That's the nature of my life. I can't be in Oslo and think, no, I want to be back in Perth. That is suffering. Instead, I'm in Oslo, that's where I'm aware of, that's where I will be for this moment. The same thing when you are meditating. It's much, much more efficient. Instead of meditating on the breath, or meditating on loving kindness, or meditating on this, or meditating on that, put that aside for a while and just ask yourself, what is in front of my mind right now? And it could be your work. It could be the appointment you have after you leave here. It could be all sorts of stuff. That's happening right now. To deny it is actually just causing you suffering and stress. Oh, I should have actually said to begin with that we do have an introduction to meditation class, which is in the room on my right. So if anyone's coming for the first class in meditation, that's being held in the room on my right. This is the ongoing class. But anyway, okay, one person's escaping. Very good. So this is the ongoing class, the introduction class is the room on my right. I thought you might go as well. So anyway, when we can, instead of having this idea where we need to be, to ask yourself, where are you? What is happening in my mind right now? In that old Emperor's Three Questions type meditation, now's the most important time, obviously. What is the most important thing to be aware of? And the answer you can remember is, whatever is in front of your mind right now. That's the most important thing to be aware of. And you may think, I'm not supposed to be thinking of my business. I'm not supposed to be thinking some fantasy when I'm meditating. That causes stress in your meditation. How about you're aware of it, it's happening right now, be kind to it. It's the kindness is this beautiful key which actually softens the experience. And if its experience is just like some sort of fantasy or some think about work, being kind to that thought, being kind to that experience means that it softens it and it very quickly disappears. Giving it ill will, I don't want to be here, I'm not supposed to be thinking about my work, I'm supposed to be just being still or something, that feeds the restlessness. It gives it more energy. So instead, wherever you are at the beginning of the meditation, whatever you are aware of, for you that's the most important meditation object in the world, believe it or not. Caring for it doesn't mean you indulge in it. Caring for it, you just know that your mind needs some kindness. That's where it wants to go. Fine. When you give it that kindness, that softens and pacifies the mind, and soon your mind becomes calm and peaceful and still. That's how the stillness is created, how it's generated. You're not fighting the mind. You know, there's many bad people in this world, bad regimes, and people fight those wars. You can understand why they do that. How much destruction does that cause? Do you want to fight a war with your own mind? If you want to fight a war with your own mind, you get lots and lots of destruction, and the place you're left with is very unhealthy. So instead, make peace. Be kind. Be gentle. What does it say under here? Does it still say the same thing? Make peace, be kind, be gentle? There's a reason for those words. That's the Buddha's second factor of the Eightfold Path. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. If you do that with your meditation, whatever you're aware of right now, you're not controlling your mind. You're not deciding what it should be thinking. You're making peace with it, being kind with it, being gentle. And you'll find, discover, amazing things happen. It's your mind, it starts to settle down, become really, really, really peaceful. It does not because you force it to be peaceful, not because you choose to make it peaceful. You choose to be aware of what's actually happening right now. Not what should be happening, but what actually is happening. And you're kind to it. And kindness softens everything down. Even physically. I've been in many situations in my 48 years as a monk where I should have been punched. We were just outside here many years ago. This guy, I called them back to deliver some, or replace some stuff they delivered. Had a big opening ceremony many years ago here. They had the governor of Western Australia, Sir Gordon Reid, and then Reid Highway after him. He was the governor at the time, and he came here to open up our Nolamara Centre. I ordered all the chairs for the VIPs. Not one of those chairs, no exaggeration, not one of those chairs had legs the same length. They all wobbled. Now imagine you having the governor of Western Australia here and he be sitting on a wobbly chair. That would not be the sort of impression we'd like to give. Especially his wife was with him as well. If she fell off during the ceremony, oh, that would be so embarrassing. So I had to call them back here to change the chairs on a Friday afternoon. All those workers had already left work. They were in the office, the pub. And they were just starting their weekend drinking. And so when I called them, they had to come back. Imagine how they felt. Aussie workers on a Friday evening having to come back to work. So when the truck just turned the corner from Constant Street to what's this place called again? No, Constance is the big one at the top there. Nansen, thank you. It's a Nansen Way. I still got some jet lag left. But anyway, Nansen Way. They turned the corner and one guy jumped out of the truck. He was still going about 20, 30 kilometres an hour. He jumped out and came running up. Where's the bloke in charge? Where's the bloke in charge? I want the bloke in charge. And for that delivery, I was the bloke in charge. And I remember he came running towards me. He had his fist up this far in front of my nose. He was not peaceful. I could not see any compassion in him at all. Instead, I could smell the alcohol on his breath. I often claim that's the most alcohol I've ever breathed in the whole 48 years I've been a monk. He was about to punch me. He was upset. I'd been taken away from the start of his weekend drinking to help the Buddhists. He got the Buddhists, he called us. He wasn't very friendly, very friendly. And he had his fist in front of my nose. And you could see his eyes were wide, like those symbols of those monsters and the drawings on the temples in Asia. He looked like one of those. But unfortunately, I had all my friends. They were also helping with the ceremony. And they were all looking. Not one of them came to help me. Thank you, friends. It was not necessary. Because was not trying to cure him of his anger, not trying to do anything, just making peace, being kind, being gentle. And because that's what I was doing, I knew he could not hit me at all. Other people would have been punched, but I just stared at him with kindness. And after about 3 or 4 minutes, the truck had parked and the boss had come out and came after him. He said, let's help unload. I said, yeah, I'll help you. So we both unloaded everything together. That's how to deal with things which are challenging for you. I didn't try to get rid of that man. I didn't try and punch him first. I didn't do anything like that. I let it be. And that's exactly what I do in meditation. You're thinking about all sorts of things. You're trying to get rid of it. No, let it be with kindness. You don't indulge in it. You do this opposite. Not trying to get rid of, not trying to keep, but just being with it with kindness, with care, with peace. And then you find it doesn't last that long. It just disappears and goes away. And that way you never have restlessness. The whole idea of restlessness is a bit weird to me. Wherever you are, that's where you'll be. And you make peace with it. All the time making peace, being kind, being gentle. And that means that it's in meditation, it's not what you're experiencing, but how you're experiencing it, how you react to it, how you deal with it. That is the trick. So just make peace with everything. Be kind. Be gentle. And then what starts off as someone trying to attack you, that's like your mind trying to attack you. It doesn't want to behave, it doesn't want to be where you tell it to be. Instead you're kind to the mind. And then the mind just follows you around wherever you want to go. So I went to London and to Oslo. My mind followed me everywhere. It wasn't in Perth when I was in Oxford. We were together all that time. That's how restlessness disappears. Whatever you're aware of is fine, as long as you are kind, peaceful and gentle with it. A little mind, if you want to think about those things, fine. When you're finished, I'll be here. You're kind to it, and your mind doesn't want to do anything other than be with you. That is how restlessness disappears. So easy. You don't do it. You're just kind. And the mind settles down. It becomes really peaceful. That's how meditation works. Okay? So can you do that? Don't see why, don't have to do anything. Just watch, see what's happening and be kind to it. Pretty simple, isn't it? So I expect all of you to be enlightened by the end of the session this afternoon. Who knows? Okay, so let's get ready for our meditation with no restlessness at all. So you're sitting down, hopefully comfortably. I will do a little guidance first of all. It's great if it works, if it doesn't work, fine. Just wherever you are, that's where you're meant to be. So just do the little guidance first of all, because people get used to this. I'll introduce the way of non-restlessness afterwards. So, close your eyes. And if it's very warm, like I'm always warm in this room, so I'm now going to imagine I'm sitting in the snow in Oslo. Imagination does actually work. You can create an environment which is comfortable for you. And then I become aware of my body, first of all. Yeah, this is against the restlessness thing, something to do, but then this is just preparation for where restlessness afterwards will be a hindrance. But then when we come to that point, I'll instruct how to deal with it efficiently, with no tiredness, no stress, with peace. So how does your body feel now? And just to start by simple kindness to the body. Just check. I like to check my toes first of all, such a long way from my head. Because I used to be at university, I was really into my head. And I was very unaware of other parts of my body. To the point that Ajahn Chah told me I had stupid feet. I was hitting them on rocks and roots in the ground. So how do your feet feel? Your toes, first of all. If you've got no awareness of your toes, wiggle them. And then I get what I call toe feeling. I can experience them. A special type of feeling in my toes. When I become aware of that, my mindfulness is increasing. And it's the kindness. I care for my toes. Even though I pay them little attention sometimes, I do care for them. Now I express that. And my toes relax. Sometimes people think, number one, you can't relax your toes, and why do you want to relax your toes? It's a good exercise. And then once my toes feel a certain type of feeling, sensation, I've got no name for it, tingling sometimes I call it. It tells me that those toes are relaxed to the max. Then I go up to the feet. The uppers, the soles, the skin on the outside, any bones or bruising inside. Try and be aware of all of that. And I relax it. After a while, when you practice this mindfulness, it's pretty easy to relax any part of the body. Once you have awareness of it, you do a little bit of trial and error, try this and try that, and you soon learn the art of relaxing your own body. And I go up to my ankles, relax them, really relax them deeply. Sometimes people say, you're just imagining this, Ajahn Brahm. I don't care, even the imagination does actually produce real, true relaxation. Just like imaginary fear creates tension. So my ankles feel that tingling sensation as well now. So I go up my lower legs, the calves, and the skin on the outside, relaxing everything to the max. As I'm sitting like this, if you're sitting on a chair, make sure that those legs are well positioned, the best position you can possibly make them. They can never be perfect, but you can always make them better. Just like my calves, they just need a little bit of adjustment. And after those calves are relaxed, go to your knees. many people play sports aggressively, and that sometimes causes injuries which can just cause pain or irritation many years after. Have a feel of your knees with your mind, checking out, making sure everything is free, balanced, at ease. And if there is any ache or pain, see if you can focus inside, like go right inside it. Because from the inside you can spread kindness, and that really works. It relaxes everything, takes away the tightness which is caused by fear. We overprotect it sometimes of our body. We don't even allow our own kindness to penetrate. And now you go right inside and spread that kindness from within. And after a while you know what kindness is, because that's what relaxes everything, allows healing to happen. And you go past your knees, up your thighs, big muscles, relaxing them to the max. And if you do it properly, you can feel those muscles, like my thighs, it's like they're resting on these beautiful, soft, feather, satin-covered pillows. Really relaxing, being at ease. And you go from there to the butt. Even if it's on a chair or on a stool, there's always pressure from my body being transferred through the butt to my cushion. So when you feel that, try and relax it as much as possible. You cannot get rid of it. But if you relax it and just experience it, it soon disappears. You don't have to cure it, you care for it. And the feeling after a while just vanishes from your perception. That's how the restlessness is also cured or cared for and disappears. And then I go to my waist. And my waist, my belt is a bit too tight. I'm going to release it a little bit. All the time, the first part of the meditation, I don't mind adjusting my body and moving something. This time I'm just relaxing the belt. Give a bit more ease to the waist. And then from the waist, when the waist is at ease, I go up my back. And very often I realize I need to stretch my back a little, give it some strength. And there I find the optimum position for my own back, a position I can maintain easily for 45 minutes. That's the time of this meditation. It feels good. And I go through the insides of my body, starting with the digestive tracts. They're pretty good today. If I ever do find any stomach ache or any aches or pains there, I always pause at that point, trying to go as close into that discomfort as possible, and from the inside out, spread loving kindness, relaxing everything. The body can heal itself so well, given a chance. I go up through my digestive tracts to the stomach. That feels fine at the moment. If there ever was an ache or a pain, I would stay with it, be kind to it and ease it, and it soon vanishes. And go up the rest of the torso. There's so many organs in there, especially the lungs, making sure that those are at ease. My lungs breathe by themselves. I very rarely tell them how to breathe. They've been doing that job for 71 years. They do it really well. I have no complaints. I trust my lungs to breathe however they decide. I'm just watching and caring for them. And they go up past those lungs, the heart, whatever else is up there, giving some peace and relaxation to all those parts of my body. And then I do get to my shoulders. When my shoulders are observed, so often they are tight. My job is to relax them, bring them to a state of ease. So I imagine them, just using imagination, I imagine them being pulled apart, being stretched by two invisible demons. That's what causes the tension there. And I tell those two demons, let go. And imagine those muscles being released. And they contract and become really at ease, no pressure, loose and comfortable. I'm not trying to prove anything. Just let go, relax to the max. And I go down my arms from my shoulders, checking all the muscles, the elbows and wrists. If I find anything there which needs to be focused on, given some kindness and peace, I will always do so. Get to my hands and my fingers, making sure that they are well adjusted, giving them some special attention, and moving those fingers if I need to. And just caring is something which makes these parts of the body unafraid, so they can find the optimum position of relaxation. And they pay me back for my concern by relaxing to the max and not causing me any more trouble for the whole meditation period. And I go back up to my shoulders and to my neck. I've just got into the habit of this now, just moving my head on top of the neck to get the best position for my head on top of the neck. And then I go to my facial muscles. My facial muscles can sometimes look tense. If I'm worried about something, or anxious, or afraid, or whatever, your emotions, especially the negative emotions, are displayed on your face. So I relax all those muscles as best I can. Which also means that the emotions, especially any negative emotions, subside. My face feels really at ease. And then lastly, if you want to do this, I use some imagination, because sometimes your brain gets overworked. Well, my brain and the brain of Venerable Sunyo, we've both been jet-lagged. So our poor brain has been so confused about when to sleep. So imagine lifting up my skull. Imagine a hinge on the right side, opening my skull, taking out my brain, just imagination, I'm not really doing this, and putting it in a little basket, my special basket where I can take my brain out so I can give it a rest. Imagine it's got a mattress on the bottom, just like a little place where your cat might sleep at night, or a little dog. It's got a lovely mattress on the bottom, a little pillow, and a nice little duvet or blanket to cover it up with, to keep it warm. I give my brain a chance to take a rest for half an hour. Just imagining that actually helps. So I've now relaxed my whole body from head to toe. And I experience it as a unit, one thing, all together, my body, or rather the body that bears my name. And if it's anything else it needs, I will grant it that attention and care. And now it starts to come, the beautiful sense of peace, what I call the delight of relaxation. I can feel it now. I'm not making this up, this is honest. My body feels so at ease. And that ease is a pleasurable feeling. And I focus on that, rejoice in it. And the relaxation always goes deeper. And all the time I've been with what is happening. And being kind to it. Allows my body to be so at ease, I can leave it alone and go to the mind. Instead of like an object like the breath or loving kindness, I just notice peace. And hear all the birds. The more peaceful and relaxed your body is, the more aware you are of the outside and the inside. And just like the body, whatever you're aware of is delightful. It brings you into this moment with a sense of joy. Now is the most important time. I focused on the now, so this body sweeping. What am I aware of right now? Whatever that is, that's the most important thing in the whole world. And what do I do with this? I respect this moment. I care for it. I'm at peace with it. I'm gentle with it. Whatever comes, comes. I don't fight it. I cannot be restless when I'm focusing on what's already happening. With the attitude of care, my attention doesn't want to go anywhere else. It's happy to be here, because I'm happy with it. So what are you aware of right now? Please be gentle with it, care for it. And if this gentleness and care, not indulgence, not attachment, not trying to get rid of things, you find the mind becomes so peaceful. The peace becomes stronger. And once peace becomes stronger, then stillness becomes apparent. You don't choose stillness, you notice it. things move less and less and less, because they don't need to move, because you're caring. The mind doesn't need to run somewhere else to find something better. It realizes this is as good as it gets. And from the stillness, you may notice silence, where you don't try and describe this moment. You don't give it a name. Your mind doesn't take any notes. It enjoys this moment silently. If you practice kindness like this, the joy comes. Because of the joy, the mind stays, and restlessness disappears. I will be quiet now until the end of the meditation class. is very close to the meditation end now. How do you feel? How peaceful is your mind? How at ease does it feel? And how is your body? I'll now ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Nice. Now, it's usually the time now for Q&A. Sometimes in the meditation class, it takes a little while for your brain to get running again. So I'll do 3 questions from here, first of all, and then ask if there's any questions from the audience. First of all, Ajahn Brahm, are kasinas useful as objects of focus in our meditative practice? Can they be used apart from usual objects like the breath or feelings of loving kindness, metta? Yes, they can be, but usually we need to have like a basic skill in meditation to be able to use kasinas. What kasinas are they usually little discs of light. You make them into a disc so their form is the most simple and of a very pure colour, just one colour, not sort of a complicated thing. And the job is that you look at those with your eyes open and then you close your eyes until you can imagine those objects, visualise them as clear as if you had your eyes closed. As clear as if you had your eyes open, sorry. So as they appear to you with your eyes open, you close your eyes, they appear to you with your eyes closed. It's like the image of them. And then, as you focus on that image, that it should, hopefully, if you're still enough, be able to turn into a beautiful nimitta. It looks the same sort of colour, like, say, a blue nimitta, but it's more blue than blue. In other words, it's more pure in colour. As you keep looking at it for longer and longer, it's a way of turning it into an nimitta. But of course, it's very rare that people can do those type of meditations. So it's usually, if you find you can't do the simple meditations of breath or loving kindness, or just what I said now about learning how to be peaceful, and just watching what's there and being kind to it. If you find those difficult, kasina is not sort of another last hope for you. So anyway, the next question. Ajahn, your perspective about the plane did the flying, not me, confuses me a bit. Please explain more. So I'm struggling to like to live in the place I'm living now, so I would love to fly to BSWA. There's just a different perception. How long does a flight last? That if you go into the present moment, it just lasts a moment. And honestly, you're just there in the moment, not worrying how many minutes are there to go, how are we there yet, how long have we gone? And then in that moment, and it's true that you sit in that aircraft, I can't fly. I'm not a bird, I don't have wings, but the machine does the flying. I just do the sitting through this little tube somewhere. And then it does the moving. I just do the sitting. It's a different way of perceiving things. And those different ways of perception are sometimes a trick to being peaceful, to being free. If, for example, you have any sickness or pain, you use that as your teacher, Ajahn Chah used to say. If you are jet lagged, you know what that's like. It teaches you something to be able to care for your body. It's just a bodily thing. It's not my problem. It's just I have to make sure that I have enough moments to catch up on my sleep and my rest. And don't expect my mind to be so clear. So little by little, we find out that we can accept and embrace whatever's happening to us in life. And if it's unpleasant, it's something we learn from. It's our teacher. And I find that if I try and avoid it and escape from unpleasant experiences, then I'm trying to escape from my duty to learn about how my body works, how life works, how other people work. And so there comes a time when you actually welcome sort of things which you feel are not as clear as they should be. Even little things like old age. I often tell this joke that monks I'm with, like the two beside me here, that when I told them I'm getting old, they said, "No, you're not getting old." Ah, they're so kind. They said, "You are old." Which was more true. So as a 71-year-old, I'm learning just how to accept the body won't do what it used to do even 10 years ago. And instead of trying to find some magic formula, either exercise or more rest or eating different foods or taking some concoctions from people who, you know, try to make you look younger or be able to act younger, instead of doing that, we learn to accept and be at peace from these things. We learn from them. And that learning and acceptance, that you're not in control of that much. And when we learn how to let go and not be in control, but be peaceful, be kind and be gentle, we're actually just learning the best possible thing we can with whatever we have to deal with. And you find sometimes unexpected things happen. When you don't struggle, you don't strive, which means you're not wasting energy. And the energy which you have, you're really caring for it. And so it starts to build up. Anyway, the last question here. Question from Germany. You say to meditate with wanting to attain anything. Still you want jhanas and arupas. Is there no conflict? Just sit, watch and don't react? How to stay calm when overwhelmed? First of all, I mentioned this before, if you want these deep states of meditation, jhanas, or the immaterial states, you will never ever get them. You don't want them. You create the causes for them. The stillness, the calm, the energy, the joy. And then these things happen as a natural result. These are not attainments, these are stages of letting go. The deeper you let go, the more the joy happens. The more you disappear, the more that these things just appear. It's almost like default states of the mind. If you have a computer and you click that mouse, then the computer turns on. The more you click it, just the more stuff appears on the screen. But when you learn how to not click anything at all, the computer screen goes into the what's it called, the mode, screensaver. And then if you don't click anything, after a while the screensaver turns off and disappears, it goes all blank. But in meditation it gets even better. After a while looking at that blank screen, even that blank screen disappears. That's the weird stuff, but it's so true. You know that old story I keep on reporting about going to that Zen monastery many, many years ago in the north of England. I didn't know what Zen meditation was, but I was just told to keep my eyes open and watch a wall. And I was watching that wall, my eyes open. At least I knew how to stay in the present moment and be silent. That was so important. I knew how to be mindful. That's what present moment awareness and silence are. means. And then after a little while, that wall disappeared. My eyes were open and there's no wall anymore. All that happened was that my sense of sight just turned off. Nothing was moving. And so the wall disappeared. It was like an ambient sight. If it's an ambient sound, after a while you can't hear it anymore. An ambient sight, a white wall, wasn't moving, I wasn't thinking about it, I was just watching it, and it vanished, disappeared. And that's actually how these deep meditation states happen. You don't do anything. If you want something, you disturb the process. You totally disappear, and these things happen. That's why that you know there's many people have their first experiences of these deep meditations unexpectedly. They don't even try. They just, a lot of time they're giving up. Been meditating for 9 days and nothing's happened. And so they, oh, what's the point? They go and just sit there and just do nothing. At last they get the message. And they get some deep meditation states. It's wonderful to report those states. Look at that story of Venerable Ananda, the Buddha's chief attendant. All his life he was trying to get enlightened, wasn't getting anywhere. Well, he was getting somewhere, but not where he wanted to be. And the last day before he's going to be at a big conference, 499 enlightened beings, plus Ananda, who wasn't enlightened. I often mention just how embarrassing could that be. You've been with the Buddha 25 years, right next to him, and you're still not enlightened. Come on. So he gave it everything he gave it everything he had that night, meditated all night, really gave it just 100% effort. Big mistake. 100% effort is not right. 100% wisdom, 100% kindness, 100% letting go would be much better. And so when the dawn came, he still wasn't enlightened. So what to do? So he got up and said, so an hour or two before the meeting with all the other 499 arahats. So you know what he did? He decided to go to bed. Have a nap before the meeting. And as before his head hit the pillow, just as he was about to hit the pillow, that's when he became the 500th arahat. We call that the Ananda method of meditation. Go to bed. I say that because it's rebellious. You think, how can you become enlightened when you go to bed, for goodness sake? That's indulgence. You've been meditating all night. You've been running after the carrot, as I said Friday night. And then you stop. He was running so fast after that carrot, as soon as he stopped, straight into his mouth, another enlightened being. So anyway, that's how these things happen. You want them, and you get so frustrated. But it's hard to stop wanting. Can you stop wanting? Sometimes we're afraid of stopping wanting. So how do we do that? As I mentioned even last night, mentioned many times, wanting is what yourself does. It's a function of a self to want something, to exert control, to show it exists. And if the sense of self doesn't want anything for a long period of time, it tends to disappear. And that's one of the scariest things in life, you disappearing. But when you do, there's nothing to do anything. Your sense of self disappeared. And that is when things like jhanas happen. Default states of mind. No effort, just restraint. Stop doing things. Stop interfering with the process. How many times have I taught you? How can this water become perfectly still? Put it down and wait. You cannot decide you want it to become still. Otherwise, it's still yet? No, not yet. Come on, it's going to be still. How many times do I have to tell you, water, be still? You put it down, let it go, leave it alone. The only way you can do that is actually for you to disappear. As long as there's a self there, there's always something to be thirsty. I'll always be disturbing that, as long as I am. When you go, the water gets still. Anyway, there's no conflict at all. If you want jhanas and arupas, you'll find it so difficult to get them. I don't know what Ajahn Bhumali and Venerable Sunya were talking about, but they must have answered that. The deep stillness and the jhanas and the deep meditations, all stages of you disappearing. And that's one of the reasons why they're scary. A lot of people, I had some good meditators over in the UK on Zoom, and they were getting scared of disappearing. It's like you're losing control. Wonderful. Be at peace. Like the wind doesn't control anything. Where does the wind come from? Where does the wind go to? So there's some things here which challenges our understanding. But eventually, everything stops. And beautiful peace and stillness and wisdom and freedom. Okay, how about some questions from the floor? The question, yes, okay, oh, one and two. Okay, first of all, yes, Miko. Is it Miko, isn't it? Yeah. I've got the...
How is restlessness different from sensual desire?
How is restlessness is a form of sensual desire. Sensual desire starts more restlessness happening. It's the mind just wants to be somewhere where it's not. And sometimes that is sometimes ill will, sometimes it's sensual desire. Imagine you want to be here, then desire to be somewhere else, whether it's sensual desire or desire to get out of this, doesn't exist. You're not restless, you're still. Sensual desire is thinking, if I get over there, if I have, you know, a nice meal, because you're on 8 precepts, what's your favorite dinner? When you start thinking about that, of course, the sensual desire makes you restless and you can't be happy here. You got a thought about something you'd like to eat. How do you overcome that once it started? Make peace with it and it soon vanishes. You fight a war with it, it gets worse. It's one of the reasons why Buddhism is a non-conflict religion. You fight a war. It just makes more conflict all the time. More tragedies. Okay, anyway, there's another question. Yeah.
Must the seeker exhaust itself in order to dissolve?
Must what exhaust itself?
The seeker. The seeker.
Seeker?
Of attainments or jhanas.
Attainments of jhanas. Must they exhaust themselves? So, what was the question? Do you hear it, Bobby? Seeker.
Yes, must the seeker of those attainments exhaust itself in order to dissolve?
Yeah, not really exhaust itself, but see through wisdom that that's not the way to go. That's creating more pressure, more suffering in its life. As the seeker, I don't know what people seek for. But first of all, be aware of what you're seeking for. And then, is it attainable? After a while, you can try this and try that, and eventually you get frustrated. But when the seeker disappears, when you don't want anything, the seeker wants something. He wants some sort of truth or some sort of freedom. And after a while, you don't exhaust yourself. you realize this is not the way to go. Instead of seeking over there or seeking over here, over somewhere else, you just look inside. You can't really call that seeking. It's when you stop the seeking, this is all that's left. And you go inwards rather than outwards. And inwards, a good idea, a good example of that, I'm just thinking of nice similes, was that simile of the driverless bus. When you're in a bus and it's not going where you want to, you want this, you want that, you want to go to some nice place to live, like Jhana Land. And so tell the bus driver, please take me to Jhana Land. And never takes you there. You try, help your bus driver. Take him to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia to teach him how to get to jhanas. And then never works. And so after a while, you realize the problem is you're seeking the driver, the one who drives all this seeking. And eventually in meditation you eventually find the bus driver's seat. And you find the bus driver's seat is empty. There's no one there. So who are you going to tell? Bus driver, seek for this, seek for that. There's no one driving the bus. So then you just sit down in your seat and you shut up. You don't want to go anywhere. You don't want to do anything. It's hopeless. Have you ever noticed how your will is really stupid? You want something and your bus driver takes you somewhere else. You really think that, you know, with all these years you've been alive, you must be smarter. Your bus driver, your will, when it's not there, you can sit down and relax. No desire. Or that shouting out, giving instructions, being the backseat driver, doesn't work. And you disappear. Make any sense? A couple of people are nodding because they're very kind. Or they're falling asleep. I don't know which one. Okay, so we've gone over for 5 minutes, so we'll now finish. Unless there's some really important questions. Okay, so if you want to ask another question, come up afterwards to ask it. So now we'll just pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then we can go and do what we need to do next.